Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're starting today without a regular warm-up. It's just going to be listening to the bells and the chimes in the background. Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm going to be speaking with a special co-host, Phyllis Georgic, today regarding the situation with the E. coli outbreak. We're going to have the music playing in the background while I introduce a little bit more information about Phyllis, and she's been a longtime friend. She's the mother of three sons and has studied homeopathy since 1985, having well over 2,000 hours of formal training in this art and science, and as well as 1,000 hours of study and training in nutrition, diet, herbs, midwifery, Tibetan Qigong, and many other holistic forms of ancient medical healing. She has taken anatomy and physiology courses and been to autopsies and embalmings as part of her studies. Her homeopathic teachers have been internationally known practitioners, such as Dr. Banerjee of Calcutta, Dr. Ramakrishnan, M.D., of Homeopath of India, and David Little, formerly of the Himalayas, now residing in Hawaii, and Dr. Iziaga, M.D. of Buenos Aires, Argentina, plus Will Taylor, M.D. of Oregon. Well, Phyllis, are you there? You've got a lot
I have a lot more people that I've studied with than that. You just can't list everybody that you studied with.
we wanted to give you a good introduction, and, you know, we met together as we studied with Dr. Robin Murphy in Atlanta, and I know that you've done a lot of studying with the alchemist and environmental chemist as well. So you have you're an organic gardener personified. So that's why you're on today's show, which is called typically How Homeopathy Grows Great Organic Gardens. But because we're talking about the earth and our gardening and the spread today, it's going to be about the spread of disease and how we keep a balance and harmony within our environment, our outer environment and our inner environment. That's why I love having you on the show to talk about how all of this happens and how we can be more in control based on our behavior and our actions and our awareness with the environment around you. I wanted to also, let me see if there's some way that I can tone down the sound. I don't know how to do that.
I think we could just, if we talk over it, I think it might kind of like blend in the background.
I think I'm getting used to it. So I wanted to let people know that we do have a regular study session on Monday, Studying the Organon of Medicine by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, who is the founder of homeopathy. And although sometimes it's not, like I was away on a little trip this Monday, so I didn't do the show, but I get in there as much as I can, and you can listen to the past archives. We are almost finished reading the entire book, The Organon of Medicine. And then Wednesday we have organic gardening. Typically our co-host is Kaveh Raj, who is an agro-homeopath and really teaches us about pest management and how to make our flowers and fruits flourish in the garden, all with homeopathy and other biodynamic types of gardening. On Thursday, we're going to have a big show coming up tomorrow with Greg Glazer and Alan Phillips about vaccinations and your rights in the United States and how do you get a waiver or exemption and what more do you need to know about your legal rights and constitutional law specifically. On Sunday, before midnight, there is a meditation to get us started into a calm, peaceful state of mind, even though all of this chaos is happening around us. So we're going to get right into our show today, which is specifically talking about the outbreak of E. coli, which has really caused havoc in Germany and Europe, and I just recently read that there's been a case in Poland identified in the hospital there. So it is continuing to spread, and we're going to learn quite a bit more about this particular issue. So, Phyllis, I think I wanted to start off asking a question about how such a thing, or maybe we should start out just telling a little bit a definition of what E. coli is.
E. coli is, right, yeah. Escherich, Theo, Theodore
Escherich. It starts with Escherichia. E. coli,
right.
Short, and it's enterohemorrhagic, meaning that it can cause bleeding, and internal bleeding, and it's a bacterium that is commonly found in the gut of humans and warm-blooded animals. Most strains of E. coli are harmless, and we're going to be talking about how we have a balance in our gut. Some strains, however, such as enterohemorrhagic E. coli, EHEC for short, can cause severe foodborne disease. It is transmitted to humans primarily through consumption of contaminated foods, such as raw or undercooked ground meat products and raw milk. So it's quite surprising that it's coming, especially supposedly from vegetables, right, and fruit. So its significance as a public health problem was recognized way back in 1982 following an outbreak in the United States, and EHEC produces toxins known as virotoxins or Shiga-like toxins because of their similarity to the toxins produced by Shigella dysenteria. And EHEC can also grow in temperatures ranging from 7 degrees Celsius to 50 degrees Celsius. Somebody would have to translate that to Fahrenheit for those folks in the United States. And I don't know, is Canada use Celsius?
I guess so. They may.
Yes. And
it's just that 0 is 32.
Right. And the optimum temperature is 37 degrees Celsius, which is about the temperature that we have now right here in my location, which is 100
right.
degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
So it's quite quite warm. So they're saying that it has quite a range of ability to live if it goes all the way down to 7 degrees Celsius. It can grow also in acidic foods and down to the pH of 4.4. And in foods with a minimum water activity of AW of 0.95, I guess that's the amount of moisture that it needs to continue to survive. It is destroyed by thorough cooking of foods until all parts reach a temperature of 70 degrees Celsius or higher. That is quite high. That's way over 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right. So it actually, meat should cook at about 180 degrees.
Okay.
180 degree cooking of meat actually does will if internal temperature of any meat is at least 180 degrees, it will kill E. coli and Shigella and all the other things, as well as most parasites within meat.
Okay. We've got someone in the live chat, and he's asking about the bells, and I'm not sure how I can turn those off. That is the
we're sorry about that. We don't know how to do that.
It's an automatic thing, and I put it to set as maybe I could put it down lower. Okay, I think I fixed it.
Okay, hey, great.
Okay, so what message do we take from chiming bells? I don't know. We're going to have to think of some connection, why it continues to ring, and how it connects with our talk today. So what else did we want to know now regarding the outbreak? We wanted to know specifically how we can have an outbreak of this nature and how it can originate just in general, rather more specifically to this outbreak.
Well, basically, we do know that E. coli lives in our intestinal tract, so evidently it must have some function there. And its function is to actually help us to break down the food in our stomachs so that we can utilize the last portions of the material before we eject it from our bodies. So E. coli does come out in our fecal material. And so fecal material is probably the reason that it becomes part of the food chain if the food is not cleansed properly. So if chickens or mostly beef cattle are not butchered properly, then their fecal material becomes part of the water that you're cleansing the rest of the meat in. And this is where the E. coli bacteria begins in the food of the meat portion of our food.
And I've seen quite a few videos showing how the foods, the way that they're processed, may not be clean. And also when you're getting ground beef and things like that, it's a combination of meat from all different sources that just blend together and get into that temperature percolator to kind of harvest it, make that E. coli grow even more.
Right. So E. coli is not indicative of the muscle meat of the animal or
okay.
of our muscle meat. It's not really part of the matrix of our meat. It gets there because of contamination, of bad cleaning, or of butchering in ways that are very questionable as to how this is done. Certainly, if you are butchering cattle individually, you don't have that. But when you do this mass butchering, and like you said, when meat comes from all over the place, you don't know how one place had done their butchering versus another.
Right.
So as a result, that's how that gets there. When it gets into the food chain of vegetables, most often it's because of manure from animals or manure from humans. And often in these large tracts of vegetable farms, they don't have sufficient bathroom facilities for the workers. So sometimes they go to the bathroom and they have bowel movements where water runoff comes into the food.
Mm-hmm.
This is, certainly something that is supposed to be monitored highly, and many people are very, food growers are very, very adamant about making sure that their food does not get contaminated in these ways. But in some places, of course, people want to get this stuff out. Maybe somebody was sick that afternoon. They didn't get to make it to the outhouse, the facility, the porta potty, whatever. And so as a result, sometimes this happens. In cleaning the material before it gets to where it needs to go, that's supposed to be monitored and gotten to, but you can't always maintain that. The only real way that you would know where it really came from is if you grew it in your backyard or you grew it in your neighborhood on some sort of an urban farm or even a suburban farm area.
And it only only takes one person,
right,
who contaminates this one batch for it to begin to spread, right? I mean, it doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't take much at all, and that's why that it doesn't happen on a wide basis is an amazing thing.
True.
Plus the fact that it would not affect us as severely if it were not for the fact that we in first world countries take so many antibiotics. Antibiotics kill the good flora in your stomach. I mean, the reason why you've got E. coli in your belly is to help you to chew up food, but why doesn't the E. coli, get so outrageous in your stomach that it takes over? Well, it doesn't, because you've got other bacteria in there that are good flora for you. And that actually keeps the E. coli in check and keeps the E. coli doing their job and not running rampant and coming further up into your intestinal tract, into your small intestine, because truly E. coli cannot even go into your small intestine. It can only be in your large intestine, in your lower colon. Actually, in your ascending or descending, and sometimes your transverse, but most often it's not even found in your ascending colon. It comes right out of your small intestine. So as a result, it has a limited area in your body where it maintains itself, and it does its good work. So we've got to recognize the fact that we over-medicate ourselves, and in doing so, what small amount of E. coli might be on our food immediately affects these people. Now, it doesn't tend to affect the people of third world countries where they use their own fecal material to grow their own crops in their backyards, because they'll take out feces that has been in an outhouse for a very, very long time that's broken down pretty well, and they do use that on their food. And they seem not to get ill. It's people of first world countries that tend to get ill because, again, they're more exposed to the uses of antibiotics that are killing all of the good flora, and that good flora is what you have to be real mindful of. You want to maintain that. So that's why we use homeopathy, because homeopathy does not interfere with those processes.
Okay. That's a great introduction to the use about how it originates. And also, so we want to really stress as much as possible that a good portion of the majority of this type of contamination can be eliminated through proper handling of food and proper disposal of fecal material and also washing the hands. That's really the majority of where they end up finding these contamination begins, when people do not wash their hands. And that should be stressed. And then also we can, at home, prevent contamination or disease from by cooking at the high temperature. The problem is, if you're eating fresh fruits and vegetables, and this is where we've gotten into this particular problem, is because you don't typically cook your vegetables at such a high temperature, 180 degrees.
Right. And you don't, and then sometimes you want to eat them raw, such as cucumbers and sprouts.
Right.
That's the whole point of it. You want to eat them raw. And you can, take things like apple cider vinegar and spray that all over them. This will not ruin the flavor of the vegetable at all, and it will take away, believe it or not, it will take away things like salmonella and E. coli bacteria very quickly.
So you're saying simply repeat that?
If you took apple cider vinegar,
mm-hmm,
and washed your vegetables and your fruits in apple cider vinegar, it will take away the bacteria. It will kill that bacteria for you, and it will wash it off of your food. So,
you use the apple cider vinegar to do a vinaigrette dressing anyway.
Right.
So,
well, one of the reasons why we put dressings on salads, to be honest with you, the reason we do that is to prevent bacteria,
okay,
on the food from getting into us. This is the reason why we pickled things. This is the reason why we salt things. It's the reason why we pickle them. It's the reason why all raw foods were made in a pickling manner, because that is what kills the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're eating vegetables and fruits and you decide not to put any, anything like apple cider vinegar on, let's say apple cider vinegar is against your food practice because for some reason or another you feel it builds yeast or whatever, so then rinse it off with apple cider vinegar and then rinse it off with pure water.
Mm-hmm.
That will take this away. I mean, you've killed the bacteria. I mean, I'm a proponent of cleaning with baking soda and vinegar. And so baking soda and vinegar will really kill most of everything that's out there. And it's real simple to use, and it doesn't cause any problems to you. It doesn't give you any internal contamination, and you're basically doing pretty well with it. What I see is most people, as soon as they start to have vomiting and diarrhea, because of food, they think they've got the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start to just, you know, they want to just lay down, or they want to drink hot liquids, or they start taking some medication, whether it be simple things like Pepto-Bismol or Lomotil or whatever it is to stop the diarrhea. And that's what you don't want to do. When you've got vomiting and diarrhea, guess what? Your body knows that you need to do this. So support your system. And we know simply the remedy for bad food and bad water, food poisoning, is arsenicum album. That's the first remedy that you use. You've got projectile vomiting and diarrhea. And let me tell you, everybody who had this E. coli that caused them to die started out with projectile vomiting and diarrhea. And
mm-hmm.
I can bet you dollars to donuts that they prevented themselves from vomiting and having diarrhea.
Right, they kept it in.
They kept it in.
Yes, and that's the problem. You know, the body's natural method
of
healing.
Body's natural defense system is to do this. Why thwart the effort of your body's natural defense system?
I myself had that salmonella poisoning earlier in this year, and it is kind of like very fearful of a death type of a life-death situation where everything in your whole body is being eliminated, and it's extremely painful and debilitating, and you don't know whether when it's going to stop. I did take arsenicum album. It just so happens in a high potency, and then I went to sleep and woke up okay. But the thing
and
is,
actually, that's the thing to do.
But what do people do if they don't know about it or they don't have it on hand? That's another thing.
Well, another thing you can do is just take bread, put it into a toaster, and blacken it.
Uh huh.
And then take that black charcoal and put it into water and stir it up and sip it slowly. That charcoal will take the contamination out of you and hold on to it and then eliminate it.
Wow.
So that's
another
thing you can do.
Well, we know.
In extreme cases, you can take some kerosene. Everybody probably has some kerosene sitting around the house here or there. Take a tablespoon of kerosene and put a tablespoon of honey into it and stir it around and drink that tablespoon, those two tablespoons of honey and kerosene. And
really?
Believe me, it will get everything out of you. You will vomit this out, you will have diarrhea, and it will go away.
Okay, so it's sort of like Ipecac.
Yeah, kind of like if you feel that you've got a parasite in you, you're someplace far away. You have no remedies. You have nothing. Either a parasite got into you, or you know you've eaten bad food. Something bad is in you. You know it. You drink that kerosene. If you can get it down straight, then get it down straight. Honey will kind of cut the flavor of it just slightly. It is really rough, but I've done it before, and it can be done. And I know people who have done it. And you do smell like
you smell like gasoline.
For a while.
Yeah.
But
it
will work, and it won't kill you, and it will get rid of it. It will kill the bacteria. And then, of course, you're going to have to feed yourself some yogurt or some kind of probiotic or whatever, because you are killing everything when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
you're
I
getting
wanna,
it out.
Yeah, I want to make a little preface. I usually do this at the beginning of the show, that each time we do have a Blog Talk Radio, homeopathy radio show, it is a study session. This information is just educational, informative. If you have a need to get care, you must see your healthcare professional, and that is going to be your advisor and your counselor. We are just educational show. Wanted to let you know about that, which is what we usually let people know.
And that's true. I mean, you're going to have to find somebody, but if you're stuck in a situation where you can't find anybody and it's life and death, like you were saying, that salmonella made you feel like, I think I'm going to die. What do I do?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And sometimes you are stuck in a situation. You're out camping or somewhere. What are you going to do now?
Right, so you need to know home remedies, I guess.
Right, you need to know some kind of ways to get yourself out of it. And truthfully, if you can toast bread and burn it and then eat that, It's certainly not, these things that I just mentioned will not harm you. They will get you out of whatever's going on. Certainly if you drank maybe a cup of kerosene, it would kill you. But a tablespoon of kerosene will not.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we're not supposed to eat burnt food. But definitely if you're trying to make yourself some charcoal, I certainly would not take the charcoal briquettes and try eating them. But I definitely would take food, such as bread, and make it into charcoal and definitely get it into me.
Well, I can vouch for that because my grandpa, he loved burnt toast, and he lived into his 90s.
Right. So there you go. I'm not afraid of burnt toast either.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, me too.
We wanted to also... You mentioned something to me about this foreign countries, they use the waste from the outhouses as fertilizer, and you talked about that. But then you said something about chemicals. They use chemicals to make them more fragrant, and they allow...
I was mentioning the fact that, you know, like here in the United States or even in first world countries, such as Spain. Spain is a first world country, where they use outhouses or they use these porta-potties. In days gone by... And even up in the woods and in third world countries where chemicals are not often used, the fecal material in an outhouse will break down on its own, just like anything else, just like your dog's little pile of poo will break down eventually, so will human fecal material. We don't like it around, and we know that we should make latrines of it. We don't want to step in it. We don't want to bring it into on our feet, into our homes, to touch it with our hands. But nonetheless, if this was all piled in an area and you put, let's say, lime, ground up limestone on it, it would break it down into a material that would become dirt again. And that is a high, rich mineral content dirt that you can use as a fertilizer on your property. Now, in days gone by, they knew that at a certain time or another, we've got to put the lime on this outhouse and let it sit for a while. We've got to dig a new one. But eventually, they'll go back to that old one and they'll take that out and they will put that onto their farm. What's happening nowadays is that the chemicals are being introduced into the third world countries. Well, I would say maybe the second world countries. And they are using these porta-potties, but they still think they can use that human manure. They don't realize that the human manure is not being broken down as it once was because they're using these chemicals that should normally be taken to a sanitary processing unit, like a sewage system, where the sewage plant will take and clean it all out. And so they claim that they have this ability to separate those chemicals and the fecal material from the good water and then be able to put that back into the environment again, where third world countries don't always realize this, and so the fecal material might be brought out onto a field before it has matured into dirt and it still has its volatility as the bacterium that it is.
Okay. And in addition to that, the fact that so many people take the antibiotics, would those antibiotics or the resistant strains be in the fecal material now?
Oh, why, certainly. I mean, that's another big issue about the fact of baby diapers. Vaccinations are given to children that are live vaccines, these polio live vaccines and these measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox vaccines. They are being excreted in the fecal material of these children, and then most people don't realize that that fecal material is not to be thrown onto a landfill. It has to be thrown into the sewage system. So you have to take those baby diapers as I did with my cloth diapers, as my daughter-in-law does with her cloth diapers. We've got to rinse them out and send them down into the sewage system. And people are not doing this. So as a result, we have a lot of E. coli and various viruses and salmonella living on landfills that are not supposed to have any fecal material of humans on it at all. They even warn you not to, that they tell you you can throw your dog feces down a commode, but they tell you not to throw your cat feces because they know full well that the cat feces cannot, has that trichinosis in it. Or no, it's not trichinosis. I can't remember now
no,
what
they,
it is.
They have a cat. Yeah, cat.
I can't remember. But anyway, it's
okay.
Some sort of a parasite. Evidently,
right.
They can't remove it in the sewage systems, and it goes out into the oceans, and it actually is killing these sea otters.
Oh, wow.
So, again, you know, some people will flush their cat's litter down the commode
mm-hmm.
rather than throwing it out. Now, it needs to be this is the problem. We have all this fecal material, and nobody is actually digging holes, making latrines, and putting them inside.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the diapers are a big problem in my estimation. They're
mm-hmm.
an enormous problem that we've got to deal with. And we're
so
introducing them into third world countries too. So now we've got more paper diapers in third world nations.
Right. So it sounds like, in general, our habits have gone astray, and we're not keeping our environment clean from our own personal waste material, and we're contaminating our own waste material with the abundance of antibiotics and vaccinations and other kinds of chemicals that we use. We've become chemical world, chemical nation, and it is as opposed to letting the natural cycles of deterioration and creating rich, potent, healthy soils. We're really making them more deadly soils. So now we're going to talk a little bit more about, and I wanted to let people know that there is a very comprehensive website on HWC, Homeopathy World Community. Ildiko Naji has started this thread of Escherichia coli outbreak from the last couple of months. And there's a lot of information there, including the concept from Mike Adams that this whole thing was bioengineered, and that goes into a whole other realm of conspiracy theory. But he really brings questions into our minds that we really want to take a closer look at how it is possible. I guess you answered the question at the beginning of how it's possible that...
it is possible. It's just a shame that you know, who were they trying to eliminate by making this particular Spanish farm destroy all of their cucumbers to say, oh, geez, we're really sorry, but we think it came from this organic sprout farm?
Yeah.
I find that odd because organic sprouts are not grown with any fecal material at all. They're grown with vegetable composted material, and
right.
therefore there should not be any E. coli at all in it. If someone had
so
E. coli...
It's very strange that it could be an outbreak coming from this source, which is
right.
rather unusual. Although they have had previously... E. coli in sprouts in an outbreak in the United States, and I think that was from somebody's not washing their hands properly.
Right, or maybe they took water, again, you know, let's say that, you know, they knew that it was a real good source of water, and then for some reason or another, someone dumped a baby diaper.
Interesting.
Or someone decided to have a bowel movement somewhere close to where this water source begins.
And that could easily happen. I hate to say this, but I was just visiting in New York City, and my son saw a person, a little six-year-old, standing right there and going to the bathroom on a car, just
right.
like squatting down right there because they had to go and go because.
Right.
And if this could happen, it could happen anywhere.
It could happen anywhere, and it's happened anywhere. It's the whole point of it is it's happened everywhere. We've all had, from time immemorial, some exposure to these diseases, but why is it that it's going exponential? And I have to believe that it's going exponential because we use too many antibiotics. These outbreaks do not happen in third world countries where they do not use antibiotics. These people have very few antibiotics that are ever given to them. In first world countries, people, especially in Germany, France is a big one. They'll use homeopathy and then they'll use antibiotics too. But yeah, the more antibiotics that are used in your life, the more you use Tylenol and acetaminophen, or I can't say Tylenol, but I mean any kind of acetaminophen or ibuprofen or any kind of aspirin, you're actually lowering your immune system's response instead of heightening it. So when you lower it, your immune system can't handle things, and of course you're going to become more ill when something like this happens. I mean, people would maybe have diarrhea for a little while. Again, they would take a spoonful of honey, or they would, something simple, make some rice water or some barley water, and this would calm their stomachs down, and they would go on, and they would be fine. But people would know, well, I have to throw up, I have to, have a diarrhea, I've got to go, and I've got to get this stuff out of me. They knew enough that it was bad stuff, and whatever it is, they called it bad humors, bad juju, whatever they wanted to call it. They called it something, they knew it was bad, they knew it had to come out of them, and it was a common sense thought. Where nowadays, everybody immediately, when you're having diarrhea, they all think they're going to die of dehydration, which does not happen often. It's a very unusual thing to have diarrhea and vomiting to the point where you would dehydrate. This would often, in homeopathy, we know we've got a few remedies. I mean, China officinalis, cinchona bark, is for loss of vital fluids. So if you're having, vomiting and diarrhea to the point where you just cannot stop it, China is one of the remedies that we use often for this.
Thank you for that. I wanted to emphasize and highlight the note not to take aspirin, because especially when you have these kinds of illnesses, how it can suppress the fever and suppress the elimination, the body's natural mode of healing itself. And recently, I hate to say this again, there's a spread of some kind of a virus going on right now where people are getting fever, chills, body aches and pains. Usually I'm thinking of Eupatorium perforata for that homeopathic remedy for these bone aches and pains. And it's lasting for 3 days. But when they take the aspirin and to lower their fever, which is the body's natural means of getting rid and killing the bacteria or the strain of virus, whatever is in there, it is reducing their own personal immune system.
Right. And when you lower your fever, I mean, your fever is meant to cook out the bacteria or the virus. So you lower the immune system. When you take that aspirin, you lower your immune system's response. Yes, it may make you feel better in the short run, but what you need to be doing is things that are going to support your immune system and not distress it or destroy it. Also, many people don't realize this, and this is a good place to put this in. The old wives' tale, people don't know whether it's starve a fever and feed a cold or feed a cold and starve a fever. If you have a fever, your liver needs to work. You can't feed yourself food when you have a fever because your liver is already doing a job and it doesn't have time to digest your food. So when you have a fever, you starve. You just drink liquids drink juices and liquids and try not to do anything heavy. When you've got a cold, then you can eat what it is you care to eat. But when you've got a fever, you really have got to let your liver do its work, and you've got to let your fever do its work. With homeopathy, a lot of people will say, but I just don't want to feel in pain. Well, if we use a homeopathic remedy such as Eupatorium Perf for dingy fever, bone break fever, or whatever you want to call these long bone-pained flus or whatever viruses, that cause you this particular symptom, it takes that symptom away. You don't have the pain. You sleep. You may have
right.
a fever, but you sleep peacefully. You don't have a fitful fever. And then when you wake up, you broke your fever and you're sweating and you're getting all your toxins out. You know, and it helps your kidneys to work properly. It helps your lymphatic system to remove all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we have a tremendous source of documentation for the usage of homeopathic remedies in all sorts of cases of, as we say, toxins, poisonings, food poisonings, influenzas, and other kinds of situations where people are very uncomfortable and want to make themselves feel better, but it will work in harmony with the body, with the body's own immune system, to alleviate those symptoms actually quicker. Because if you start to take antibiotics, you take in a 5-10-day course, whereas a homeopathic remedy over the course of 1 or 2 days, you may already be feeling a lot better.
Oh, yeah, you might be feeling a lot better in like 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You might not be totally well, but in 5 hours, you should be feeling on the mend. Within
right.
3 to 5 hours, you should be feeling on the mend. Now, the issues that these people had from this particular E. coli that they were talking about, there were a lot of symptoms that they were in total collapse and complete prostration. And that's why I listed the Baptisia tinctoria, because it deals with typhoid fever. And basically typhoid comes from
mm-hmm.
E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from E. coli. It comes from salmonella. It comes from cholera.
Let's let people know that on Homeopathy World Community, there is a banner on the front page that takes you directly to the Escherichia coli, E. coli 0104H4, which is the one that's posted up there, and it's got the listing of all this information that you're going to be providing for us today about Baptisia tinctoria and how it's been applied in the past historically. So
right.
go ahead and tell us some more about why this came to mind when you heard about the outbreak.
Well, just simply that they were in total collapse. They didn't know where they were, and Baptisia tinctoria is a remedy that if you have influenza, or if you've got measles, or you've got been exposed to sewer gas, you've been exposed to any kind of methane gases, methane poisoning, and your head feels so large, and you don't know where you're at. You might even be having a flu where you're just in a room and you see the child. And I remember having one of these fevery flus when I was 8 years old. I didn't know where I was. I remember pieces of my mother walking in the door, calling my name, saying something to me. And then the next thing I know, I fall asleep and I wake up again. I don't know where I am. She asks me my name. I can't remember my name. I see her. She brings in somebody from outside. I don't know who this person is. This person gives me some sort of a shot. I don't realize that my mother got so fearful of what was going on with me at the time. I was 8 years old. She brought a doctor over, and she spent like $35, and that was expensive money when I was a little girl, to bring this
yeah.
man into the house to give me a shot of something that I was actually allergic to, but she was so fearful that I was going to die. So Baptisia deals with these kinds of fevers where you're so weak, you can't breathe, your lungs are collapsing, you're in total collapse, and you don't know where you are. You cannot recall anyone or see anyone. You have a putrefied breath. Your breath smells like you're rotting inside.
Right.
And is
this where you feel like your body is in parts and that you're spread all over?
All over the place, right.
Yeah.
But you look at your foot, but you say, that's not my leg. Or you think your leg is over there when it's really over here. And they might, like, pick at their body, wondering whether it's real, whether it's themselves or not. That's how out of it they are. And I'm quite sure from what I read that Baptisia tinctoria would probably have brought these people up and out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they just probably antibiotic these people to the hilt. And, you know, of course, they just got worse and worse and worse. And as soon as your lungs fill up with fluid and they can't do anything to reverse that situation, you will suffocate.
Do we want to say any bit more about the Baptisia tinctoria, this confusion as if you're drunk, kind of, you can't collect yourself and you feel like your body is scattered all about the in different pieces and can't get itself together? This comes from the idea that it is is it a legume? Is it a flower?
It's a flower.
Right. And so the person really does look very besotted and has this foul smell to them. And so just as if you were... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. And a lot of the information that we have about Baptisia before it was even used for typhoid and yellow fever and, you know, all of these other horrible states of being where they were just in total collapse and die in a few hours after being attacked by whatever it was they were attacked by, that this was actually noted in ancient times because people had eaten or smelled the flower and had such a reaction to it that they had these various states. Maybe just smelling it would not have caused them to be totally distressed and die. But certainly they might have had this besotted look and this dull face and their sensation of you know, just laying flat on the ground and not being able to get up and not remembering their name.
Right.
Not knowing where they were. I can't pick up my legs. My legs are over there. No, your legs are right over here. No, my legs are way over there. You know, that kind of attitude. So I'm quite sure that is how it came about.
So we can see the difference in approach to healing, that homeopathy is going to have to look at the symptoms that the person has and make a decision as to what is the appropriate matching energetic remedy. So if the person has this E. coli illness but does not have the symptoms that we just described, then Baptisia would not be the one to be chosen. So we can't just say this for that. And that's really, really important for people to understand.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the reason why people will ask, well, what remedy can you give me for this problem? Well, there's a bunch of remedies. I need to know what your symptoms are for me to know what remedy to recommend or what remedy I think you might need.
Mm-hmm.
As homeopaths, we do also make remedies from diseases. So there is a remedy, actually, a bowel nosode made from E. coli. And it is for botulism most often. And that's what basically this is. This is a form of botulism. We do have a homeopathic remedy made from botulism, botulinum. And botulinum does deal with something called blind staggers. You know, they have weakness and they can't walk. And they're staggering around and they're running into things. When you have botulism, and I've had it a couple times, you can get it simply from tea bags that have been in your iced tea in the refrigerator too long, it will start to botulize.
Really?
So when you make your iced tea, make your iced tea and take your tea bags out. Don't leave them in there because they will begin to botulize even in a refrigerator. If you make sun tea, I think you understand how to make sun tea where you put water in a glass jar and you put tea bags inside and set it out in the sun. If it's an overcast day and that tea bag just kind of like, you know, tincted the water, but the sun did not shine upon that water and really, you know, cook that water.
Right, so it's not getting up to the high enough temperature.
Correct. So as a result, what you need to do is make sure you boil, even if you're using distilled water that's already been steam distilled and boiled, it's best to take and boil your water and then make your iced tea and then let it cool down slowly and take your tea bag out of the tea. Once it's tincted to the point that you like that flavor, you take that tea bag out and put it on your compost pile because it will botulize. And I've had botulism several times because I made sun tea and didn't pay attention to the fact that the sun wasn't shining on the jar the entire time.
So what did you say about putting these contaminated tea bags into your compost pile? Will it degrade?
No, it will just break down and it will be fine. But you cannot eat that. You can't have that sitting inside your jar of tea, because that will begin to contaminate that tea. And what happens with botulism is it stops the intestinal peristalsis. It stops the undulating motion of your intestines, because your intestines undulate. Even though you're sitting here and you don't hear anything gurgling, you don't know that it's moving, your intestines, from the time you swallow your saliva, is doing this snaking type of motion and just squeezing down and pushing and squeezing down and pushing and making an attitude as it's digesting your food through your intestinal tract, as it's extracting all the nutrients with water. And that's why you need to drink a lot, because you need the hydration. And pop and iced tea and milk and coffee does not hydrate you. Water hydrates you. And so you need to have that in order to help you to pull this out. But what happens with botulism is when it gets into your stomach, and the reason why it's so dangerous, is it paralyzes your intestines. And when it paralyzes them, it stops that peristaltic action. And as soon as it stops that peristaltic action, the top part of the intestine is still moving. So it's kind of like a traffic jam on the George Washington Bridge in New York City. You know, if you keep moving the traffic in and pushing and pushing and pushing all the cars, and they've got no place to go, you're just going to have this big, huge smash up.
Right. It'll be very painful and cramping, I would imagine.
Extremely. And it can actually create intussusception, where your intestines will push in on each other, on themselves, and telescope inside itself. And that whole area, because it doesn't have any blood flow, because the blood flow has been cut off to it, can actually cause you death.
Yes, well, we know
that happens.
Yeah, and we know that horses are susceptible to having this happen, colic, and they just die when they have
I've actually saved a few horses with Nux Vomica.
So this is good to know. So Nux Vomica, if you have some sort of a botulism attack?
Yes, and botulinum is very good also. The bacillus of botulism, that can also be available. Homeopaths who are MDs can order that for their clients, and that can be available. The nosodes, the bowel nosodes also can only be available through MD homeopaths. Okay.
And they are wonderful to have. Let me tell you, Phyllis, you're not in the live chat, but we have about 8 people in the live chat right now, and I want to appreciate them coming to visit and listen to the show. We had a couple of comments I wanted to pop in here. One, previously in the show, we wanted to know the name of the parasite in cat feces, and that is toxoplasmosis.
Thank you.
You'll be thinking all night, what is that? So now,
as soon as we got off of the air, I was going to go looking for it anyway. Toxoplasmosis, and that's the reason why plasmosis. Okay.
Okay, and so then Dr. Bob is on. That's my husband, Dr. Robert Brook from NC State University. He's a plant pathologist, and he says, "Isn't the globalization of our food supply a reason why E. coli and other pathogens are becoming epidemic?" And that's a wide open question.
Yeah, well, that was what I had said in the beginning. If you had your own garden in your backyard, or let's say you had an empty lot in your neighborhood on your street, there was an empty lot. Maybe one of your neighbors owns a piece of property that is now, he just cuts the lawn. So he's wasting electricity, or he's wasting gasoline, or making a lot of noise cutting this grass 3 times a week or whatever, when it could be dug all up and all of your food could be planted right there. And everybody in the neighborhood could go there and participate communally in the planting of this food, and then participate in the harvest and participate in the consumption of said food. This is really what's necessary. This globalization of making monocrops, like we only get cucumbers from Spain, we only get papayas from the Dominican Republic. We only get, this from that place, or,
right.
Mexico is the only ones making green onions. I mean, this is not the way the earth was made. This is not
right.
the way people fed themselves in ancient times. And we are getting kicked right in the face over the fact that we are not feeding ourselves in this manner, that we want to live like lords and ladies on our estates that are 150 by 200.
Well, we do have a movement for localization.
That's
for
right,
local
we do.
Local
and
viewers.
I love it.
Okay, so and I can tell you, walking hours and hours through the streets of New York City in the last couple of days, I was passing one after the other little garden plots that were fenced in, and they were community run, and the people
Excellent.
In the neighborhood were making these beautiful fruit and vegetable and bushes, all these beautiful gardens. So I think that the word is out and the awareness is there, and even rooftop gardens in the city.
Right, so and we've got to really push for more zoning to be allowed for this to occur.
Okay, let's go back to where we were a moment ago, talking about the different approaches homeopathically to these outbreaks of E. coli. You have mentioned also, you mentioned the botulism nosode, using it perhaps intercurrently in between other remedies that where the symptoms were fitting. And you didn't mention the anthrax as a possibility?
Well, I did not mention it, but anthrax is a big possibility, mm-hmm. believe it or not, that would fit the symptoms of these particular tainted foods in the botulism. So, I think of this also. People
mm-hmm.
don't pay attention to the fact that anthrax could be part of the reason why. And anthrax can also cause this hardening. The reason that they like to use Botox, which is crazy.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that.
they want to stiffen up the skin so that it does not move. And I mean, you're actually setting yourself up to be highly sensitive to botulism in food.
Mm-hmm.
Something that would maybe just give you maybe a little bit of gas and maybe, like a little bit of a loose stool once or twice would end up becoming very, very dangerous and deadly to you if you actually have this botulism. People don't realize, and this is another thing I was discussing with someone.
Bring your phone closer to your...
I'm sorry.
I kind of think I'm losing
okay.
some of your sound.
Okay. I was speaking with some other people the other day. This mold that most people have in their homes, this black mold that causes everyone so much difficulty, has always been with humankind. We've always had this black mold. Why is it that we have more issues with it now? Well, I can tell you this right now, that black mold is penicillin.
Mm-hmm.
And because we use so much penicillin in our lives, and because people are constantly eating food, mostly dairy products and beef, that have been over penicillinized, over antibioticed.
Right.
But now they are so oversensitized to this particular mold that no matter whether they're in the same room with it, they immediately mm-hmm. become ill over it because it's part of their matrix of their system. They're so loaded with the yeast, and then the yeast becomes exterior to them, and they immediately show a sensitivity to it. It's kind of like they're like the radar for it. I can tell where it is because it dwells in me. So what we need to do is recognize the fact that overuse of penicillin has not just not worked for ear infections and sore throats anymore. It's actually set us up for all of the allergies that we have. There are more people with peanut allergies and allergies to almonds. People can't eat peanut butter anymore. They can't eat almond butter. They can't have peanut oil in their foods. And this is all
right.
because of the fact that these molds grow on these things. They also put peanut oil in vaccinations. So they're there, and they put triple antibiotics in vaccines. Every time you get a vaccination, you're also getting an antibiotic. You're also getting peanut oil, as well as, you know,
a lot of other things.
Orsine, yeah.
We're going to have to go into that, a whole show on that one. Let's talk a little bit about the botulism poisoning, and the symptoms that you have listed here are blurred and double vision, difficulty swallowing and breathing due to the paralysis of the intestines and the diaphragm, which you mentioned, choking, weakness in walking, the blind staggers, cramps in the stomach with severe constipation, and nothing goes up to the vomit and nothing goes down to evacuate the bowels. And then they have this weakness of facial muscles, which is very interesting because it mimics exactly what people are using it for.
Right.
To puff up their wrinkles, which creates that stiffness, as you said, from movement. And here you see this similarity, weakness in the facial muscles, and then also dizziness.
Yes, and this dizziness, right?
Yeah.
Along with it. And so, of course, you're going to be dizzy if you cannot vomit, and you need to. You can't pass gas. You can't burp. Nothing's going up. Nothing's going down. Nothing's going through. It's just all stopped right there. So certain botulinum has helped me when the Nux Vomica wasn't working anymore. The botulinum worked out excellently for me. I've never used anthrax as a homeopathic for myself or any of my clients, but I definitely have used botulinum.
Mm-hmm. And then you have another one listed, Sarracenia.
Sarracenia, that's the pitcher plant.
Oh, okay,
yeah, that's the pitcher plants, many people will buy them. They're water plants. They have, of course, this putrefied state to them. Mm-hmm. They smell putrefied, and that's the reason why the bugs like to, mostly the flies, like to go down inside the throat, and that's how the plant eats. But it's often used for putrefied pustules of smallpox. And often those putrefied pustules are putrefied because of E. coli or some sort of
bacteria
coming from the bowels.
Oh.
Because they will, you know, they'll have all these the scurfiest smallpox all over them. And let's say they had diarrhea, they lay down in bed. And their bum is, or their underpants or whatever is touching this fecal material, and it gets inside those wounds.
I see. So it's interesting.
Sarracenia is also a very good remedy for this, and I would think of it also. It depends upon the symptom picture, of course. That's what we're doing and talking about as a homeopath.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see it says here, morning faint after stools, they have photophobia, they're hungry even after meals, they have cramps in their neck and it's worse at night, they've got vertigo, they perspire freely, so they're really sweating up a storm. And what I didn't list there, of course, is China. I didn't list arsenicum, but I was just basing this on what I had read that the people had actually passed away from or had been completely ill with before they passed away from this particular E. coli.
And it sounds like it was a very quick onset and demise for these people.
Right, right. And the quick onset is, you know, that's the part where Baptisia tends to fit in real quick. Yeah.
Yeah, so people need to really go to a professional in any case of illness and need of care, because you can see how you have a homeopath needs to differentiate between the different remedies that are available. We have so many more in our Materia Medica than the ones that we've talked about so far today. And we can continue to talk about the ones that have been mentioned otherwise by other people here. We've got Arsenicum album, Veratrum album. Dr. Ravindra Sarswat talks about aloe. And also colchicum. So do you think that these might be come into play for specifically diarrhea, perspiration, vomiting?
Oh, sure, especially colchicum. Colchicum deals with summer diarrhea.
Uh-huh.
This is what people, and summer diarrhea And what are we talking about? Heat? And we're talking mm-hmm. about contamination because somebody ate something they, you know, didn't wash.
So
colchicum definitely fits the bill. And aloe certainly would be helpful, especially when you've got this botulism going on. It'll soothe mm-hmm. that area. But if you can't get that to release, and like I said, the Nux Vomica I've used to get it to relax and release.
Mm-hmm.
And the botulinum I've used to get it to relax.
Right. So the main thing that we keep coming back to, we want to emphasize, is good health practices, good habits, washing hands, going to the bathroom in a set place that you do not contaminate anything, not throwing baby diapers anywhere, making sure you clean yourself really well. If you have some kind of a open wound in your bed, to make sure your bed sheets are clean. Just it's constantly going back to health sanitation practices to prevent outbreaks, to prevent the vector and the spread of any disease within your own body or to anyone else. So are you still with me? Our sound is a little bit funny. Okay, Ildiko Naji has also mentioned cuprum arsenicosum, which we are very familiar with cuprum itself for cramps.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
also
then
spasmodic coughing.
Mm-hmm.
Paroxysms of coughing, as in whooping cough.
Okay. So, again, these are rarely used, only professionals who see a symptom picture and understand how to use it will be able to come to a conclusion that this is the remedy that needs to be done. Again, Claudia Necht has chimed in here and said that they have seen in the clinics, bloody diarrhea, abdominal pain due to cramping, and fever with the diarrhea. So those were the three top symptoms that she put together in order to come to a set of symptoms. She's even included phosphorus here, I suppose, for the bleeding. Cecal, Dulcamara, Colocynthus, and Mercurius, and she has listed the Ipecac. So there's a bunch of different ones. And, of course, you need to understand what are the symptom pictures for these remedies, and this is what homeopathy is all about, understanding the medicine, the drug, what the actions are in a living organism, and then matching the picture to the person who is now ill. Do you have any comments on those remedies or anything that I've mentioned?
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a moment.
Yeah, the sound keeps going back and forth.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
We also have a note from Dr. Bob, if you can hear me. He says that Germany still does not know the source of their epidemic, even though the sprouts were suspected, that they are not confirmed. So they're now destroying thousands and thousands of tons of produce as a precaution, like they did in Spain, where now the farmers who produced those cucumbers were totally out and did not reap the benefits of their planting and their harvesting, and it's sort of like what's going on economically and politically in the world, and that's where that comes into play. And now Germany is still searching for a cause, the etiology of this disease, and I don't know where they're going to be looking next, but again, the sprout industry has been affected. Migrant farmer labor often is the proximal cause of vegetable contamination, and they are not given sanitary facilities, and that's how they pass this fecal matter onto the food, which is a comment from Dr. Bob again. And that is true. So it's a matter of humanity, of taking care of people and giving them proper living conditions, proper working conditions, so that they do not are not the cause and spread of disease, not to their own fault, but because they have no wherewithal to do any better. Maybe Phyllis has lost me because I don't hear any sound from her.
No, I'm here. I just don't. I mean, I think that these people have much. Again, I have to just go back to the fact that the antibiotics are the reasons why first world countries have such issues with this, where third world countries do not.
Mm-hmm.
Their immune systems are much better. So if the World Health Organization stays out of their area and stops giving them antibiotics and food from somewhere else and vaccinations, these people are far, far, far healthier than anybody in the United States. All these people in the United States are so susceptible to every tiny little problem that comes down the road. And honestly, 15 people in an epidemic one person who dies from anything is a horrible, terrible thing. But when we look at this in the epidemics of the plague, the Black Plague, or even the Spanish flu, this is 15 people, 16 people is...
Right. So governments are covering their own bottoms or whatever to try and because they're fearful, and that causes further fear instead of taking this at face value and doing a really good comparison of numbers and saying the same thing. Malaria is much, much worse than the swine flu was.
Oh, absolutely.
And in our radio show on Thursday, we constantly talk about how they redefine what an epidemic is or a pandemic and how they redefine what the labeling and naming of a disease. And therefore, with all the shuffling around, we don't really have apples to oranges. We're not comparing very well. And even as you say, to call this an epidemic and a great outbreak, it's really, really horrible for people not to survive and for people to be this kind of illness, but the loss in livelihood for the people right now and is not comparable to what's going on.
Right.
So where are we in our reading here?
Well, I was looking at the blog trying to figure out what somebody, if there was anyone that had any questions here. You see any questions? I'm not catching where the chat is, evidently. I have four places open here. But
that's okay. I'll give you the chat the next time you're on. But basically, there's no other questions on the chat right now. However, we have on the thread on Homeopathy World Community, Ildiko has asked, please focus on the following subjects. Find cases, remedy suggestions and pictures, neutral comments on different news. And so she asked us in advance to post that onto the network. And if this, since HWC is for professional homeopaths only, you'll have to put your comments onto the Blog Talk Radio chat or go to the Facebook page, Homeopathy World Community, and post a note there. And let us know that you're interested and have some comments and questions. Contact us via Facebook or reach us at Twitter, at Homeopathy World on Twitter or Debbie Bruck on Twitter. And so I'm just checking again. We've got a few people who have been in the thread, Homeopathy World Community, and about this issue. If we don't have a lot more to talk about, we can always... end the show and come back at another time. I did post today that the case of E. coli outbreak in Poland, and they give you a photograph of a colorized electron micrograph of a cluster of E. coli bacteria to see what it looks like, some kind of like an alien image. And they were,
they're kind of, very alien to us. All of these bacteria, but guess what? They were around a lot longer than we were.
That is true. So we're going to just keep tabs on it, keep an eye on where the spread of this goes and the etiology. If they do any more research, we can always do another show It said that E. coli epidemic originated in Germany, and the Robert Koch Institute said the number of registered infections in Germany rose to 2,325 on Tuesday, with those in other European countries still standing at 100. The outbreak has killed, it says, a total of 23 people across Europe in the past month, which means it's been going on for a month. So,
And basically, Escherich, Theodore Escherich is the reason why they call it Escherichia, because he's the one who filed it in 1885 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's the reason why it's been. And again, you know, if you look under the bowel nozos are something really great to study. There's not a whole lot of information on them. Edward Bach brought a lot of the information of bowel nozos to the fore, and I think that would be a great study for an afternoon.
Okay, we'll put that on the schedule. So I really want to thank you for coming on today at the last minute to do the show on the special topic of E. coli, and I want to ask anyone who enjoyed the show to friend it, get on, put the widget on your page, let other people know about it, link to it, put it on Twitter or Facebook. And we're just going to close the show, and if you have any other questions, contact us. And I want to thank Phyllis one more time for her wealth of knowledge, and I know she'll be on a lot more.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate being here.
Okay.
God bless you all. Take care.
Okay. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.